Okay, it's a weird world. All right.
I think we're all set up here.
Okay, I don't hear the music.
No. Okay. I'm going to turn you guys off, and you'll be on in just a second, 45 seconds.
Thank you, Jeff.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thanks so much for listening to the show that celebrates creating and stories. Let's get ready and tune our imaginations together. Today, we've got a great show, and it's going to celebrate local radio. This week, while I was watching a new episode of the HGTV show, Hometown, the one with Aaron and Ben Napier that showcases their home renovations in Laurel, Mississippi, I was thrilled that a project to create a new visitor center led Aaron and a team member to bop on down to the local radio station. They needed help finding authentic 1940s furniture and household goods to recreate a public housing unit in the remodeled building. And the episode showed them at the radio station talking on the mics to the audience of Laurel. The radio board was the same one that we used at KYMN long time ago, and the scene felt familiar and comfortable. Laurel has what we have here in Northfield, and I wish that every town had their own radio station that celebrates the town happenings and stories and people and music of that place and time. Radio for every town. I grew up in a family that often had the radio playing in the kitchen or the workshop or the car. Dad listened to talk radio, news, and sometimes music. These broadcasters became part of the voices of our day. They talked to callers about their concerns and questions. They helped solve problems, talked to interesting people, and told us about the bigger world. This was a soundtrack of growing up. And I have this one distinct radio memory that I can't let go of or forget. And I'm sure I was very young. We were driving home from Grandma and Grandpa's house in our big Chevy Impala, my sister and I in the back seat keeping track of our sides, and my parents decompressing over the chatter, endless stories, and strong opinions of the wiser generation that were shared without invitation, and over the conversation we heard the music on the radio. And I was awed by the magic of the music that was performed for us. Music calmed the stress of the visit. It pulled us forward toward home. And I remember, I must have been a really little kid, trying to visualize the musicians in the studio and thought about how many microphones they had and where they set up the instruments and the singers. I also pondered how they changed the players in between songs. And I wondered how they managed the chaos of new instruments and singers. The radio station had to be a magical place. And I thought every song was live and played for us. We were the concert audience. The radio had endless performances, and it was a living stage. We had radios in our house, in our car, and we got to be a part of the show. And I must have been such a little kid thinking about this, and I probably asked my parents, and they probably gently reminded me that they had records and tapes at the radio station. The music was live for me, and it seems so silly right now, but even nowadays, I imagine the players getting together to make the music for all the listeners. There's this comforting multiple mirror effect, and I love thinking about these things in my mind, that it really resonates with me. So the music I hear in my brain is coming from the radio station that has the record, that plays the music from the record, the players in the studio recorded, that play the instruments and sing the songs and read the notes on the sheets of music and hold the instruments that play the sounds into the microphones, that carry the sound to the boards, that hold the sounds, that create the records, that play the music. and it goes on and on. The mirrors of music and the sounds of our lives, that is the duality of living. It's recorded and it's live at the same time. It's what connects us and holds us. These songs and stories, notes and words reflected through magical beams around the world and into our hearts and minds. Radio for every town. Thank you so much for listening to KYMN Radio. Thank you to KYMN Radio for supporting Art Zany Radio for the last 19 years. This is the anniversary of our first playing back in April of 2005. I hope that may there be many more stories and conversations and inspirations on the airwaves. Today to celebrate, I am thrilled to bring to Art Zany Radio the New York Times bestselling author, humorist, singer, songwriter, and playwright Michael Perry to preview his visit to the Grand Event Center in Northfield and check in on his latest projects and events and his novel 40 Acres Deep and, of course, Hunker, Brief Essays on Human Connection. His website, sneezingcow.com, has so much more for you to explore. We'll talk about that evening a little bit more, but mark your calendars now for Saturday, April 27th, 2024 at 7 p.m. It's an evening with Michael Perry and Northfield's very own author extraordinaire Benjamin Percy, and you can get details also about that at contentbookstore.com, because this is an event celebrating Independent Bookstore Day. It's kind of the after party from the bookstore, so I'm excited for that. We've got lots more to talk about. Whew, we're going to bring on Michael Perry and get my fingers crossed. Welcome, Michael Perry, to Art Zany Radio.
Real happy to be there.
It worked.
That's right.
That's always the challenge, right? You can have all the technology, but it's just always a great miracle every week that it works. And I thank you again for being here. And I was thinking about that because you do radio as well. And I wondered if you as a kid also were fascinated by radio.
So here's the thing that I find interesting, and that is that radio, and I'll give you two examples of why I probably wouldn't be here talking to you if it wasn't for radio, and yet I was not raised on radio. Let me establish one thing first. I grew up in the most loving, supportive, wonderful family. I just had such a head start. We lived on a small farm in rural Wisconsin. We didn't have much money, but we never went to bed hungry, and we always knew we were loved. And so I want to make sure and establish that. But I was raised in an obscure fundamentalist Christian sect. And one of the strictures was Dad wouldn't let us listen to the radio, and it wasn't to be on in the house. And we didn't have a radio in the house. And now, of course, going to school or riding on a school bus or a farm truck might be around, and you know, they would have a radio on. So it's not like I never heard the radio, but I definitely was not raised on it. And I was well into my teens before I discovered an old tube Bakelite sort of radio way back in the depths of a closet that I believe was my mother's when she was a teenager. And at one point, eventually, I was allowed to try and tune that in, but I would always have to warm up. And I remember hearing WLS out of Chicago coming in at night, and I used to listen to North Star hockey games. I didn't know anything about hockey, but it was the only thing I could hear. But the point was, radio just was, it wasn't, again, I want to not make my parents into caricatures. They were wonderful, well-read, thoughtful people. Mm-hmm. So they didn't cast it as evil. They just felt that there were better things for us to be doing. But then, of course, I got out on my own and I started listening to the Devil's Radio. And two things come to mind. And one was early on when I started freelance writing, and you're just casting about for ideas anywhere. And I was running all over the country in my little Ford Tempo trying to get stories. I would often be driving at 2 a.m. across North Dakota or somewhere, and I'd turn on the AM radio and I'd get AM skip from the 50,000 watt stations. Mm. And a lot of those ran trucker radio shows because the truckers were up at night. And this is, of course, long before satellite radio and that sort of thing. And I fell in love with driving late at night and picking up skip, AM skip, and listening to trucker radio shows. And eventually, one night while driving, I thought, hey, I bet there's a trucking magazine that would like a story about trucker radio. And I wound up pitching and selling that story to an editor who then became one of my great mentors and helped me along the way, and I spun that story off into other stories about country music. And so ultimately, AM radio played a huge part in helping me get a foothold when I was a young guy from the middle of nowhere, just trying to get started as a writer. The second part that radio played in my writing career that has helped me survive is when I quit my last real job in 1992, my last job where I got a paycheck on any regular basis. I wanted to be a writer. I didn't really know what I was doing. And I was kind of, you know, getting about half as much money as I needed to survive as a writer. And a guy started a little ad agency in this tiny little town near me, and he needed someone to write copy. And so I wrote copy with him. Well, his name was Al Ross, and he was an old school radio guy. Mm. He had what we call velvet pipes. And I used to go into the studio with him and watch him record spots. And we're talking like even just spots for the local grocery store. But I would watch how he prepared, and I would watch how he would approach the microphone and where he raised and lowered his voice and how each microphone has a different gain and even character. And so I just learned so much from watching him at the mic. And then later, of course, when I started doing book tours, and now half my income comes from running my mouth, I think of Al every time I step to a microphone, and I will when I come to Northfield in a little while, and that all ties back to radio. So that is my long winding way of saying that I got a late start on radio, but it made a huge impression, definitely helped my writing career. And then finally, what I would say is that Al Ross had one of the most wonderful deep voices I ever heard until I ran into a guy named Ben Percy.
And we know that voice here in Northfield, yes. he has something special, and he's made the most of it. And he's going to be joining you for this event in Northfield. Again, that is on Saturday, April 27th at 7 p.m. at the Grand Event Center. So folks should mark their calendars for that. And you guys are going to do your own show. But, you know, you also do radio, which I want to be sure and plug your show, Tent Show Radio. Tell us a little bit about that and how that came about and what you've been doing it for a long time now. How many years has that been on the air?
Oh, my gosh. I can't even name the number of years right offhand. I'd have to look it up. But even as long as I've been there, I always rush to point out that I'm a guest on that show because that show, the music is recorded live in a place called Lake Superior Big Top Chautauqua, this gorgeous blue and pearl gray tent that's pitched atop a ski hill up in Bayfield, Wisconsin. You can climb up the ski hill and see the Apostle Islands, these green jewels out in Lake Superior. And so there's this wonderful tent, and it was started by a group of folks many, many years ago, long before I was extant. And then I performed up there once and then performed again, and then was invited to fill in for the radio host that had established the show. And I'm still filling in, and it's just a lovely way to introduce folks to the tent, because I performed up there a lot, and I can convey the feeling of what it's like to watch a show there. And then, as I said, the bulk of the show is a live recording of various performances, both from the preceding season, and often we dive back into the archives.
Yeah, that's a really fun thing, and I think people do appreciate that. It's an intimate way of communicating, and it's far more, to me, just having voices of people and songs and stories feels so much better than reading something on a screen, let's say that.
It's interesting. I have I suppose like everybody else, I have a Substack these days, but I don't actually, Substack is known for being a service where you mail out a newsletter, but I actually use the podcast version of that. And once a week, I just sit down at the microphone in my little writing room above the garage, and I just talk into the microphone like, as if I'm visiting across the table with folks. And then I read a selection from one of my books, or sometimes it's something new I've written. I know this weekend I'm just doing an original piece. I just did a little book tour down in Alabama, so I'm talking about that. But it's the same thing. I find that folks come back to that because it's a way to very personally speak to a large group of people, just sitting there alone with a microphone. And you know it well. You know that when you're speaking into that microphone where you're sitting right now, you're not seeing the microphone. You're imagining the people listening as they go about their business or driving errands or working in their house or office.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, it is, it's this oddly, you're very isolated and yet you feel very connected at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking out the window at the library and the building here and the street and the cars passing by and life happening. And that's exactly what I'm thinking about. And it's really, it means a lot to me when people come up and say, sometimes they say, is that Art Zaney? Because that's how I'm known in this town. So it's a wonderful connection. Now, is what you were referencing, is that Michael Perry's voicemail? Is that what comes out of Substack? Or is that
it is, actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there's a, I think on, if you just go to sneezingcow.com and scroll down, there's a post that's pinned that says the quick summary, and there's a link to the voicemail page. And it's one of those where, you know, we do several free episodes. I think we do about a free episode a month, and then there's a subscription rate if you're into hearing a little more. And but yeah, it's this very informal, relaxed way to keep in touch with folks. And I also share things on there. You know, I always make sure if it's a paid subscriber, they're getting something that I'm not just putting on all my other social media.
Yeah, but it's really
above all, it's just a way to, I even did one recently. I was out on tour and I couldn't get back to home to record it in my usual setup. And so I sat in my car in Boston, of all places, and recorded into my iPad and was honest about it. I just told folks, I said, if this one sounds a little different, it's because I'm on the road. I couldn't get back home, but same deal, same show. I'm just sitting in my car in Boston talking to you.
Yeah, that's amazing what can happen. And I love the way that unfolds. And one of the stories I recently listened to on Michael Perry's voicemail, just, I'm never going to forget this. The story about what was your first kiss, and it was also first date, where this is unbelievable,
oh,
folks.
God.
You and your buddy actually drove to pick up the gal in a hearse.
Yeah, it's a wonder. I think I said in the piece, I was very shy. I'm still very shy. There's a difference between being shy and being able to perform. And I'm just, I've always had a hard time just walking up to people in public and talking to them or meeting them. And I don't think I'd have ever gone on a date in my life, except that I had the shelter of my parents because we weren't allowed to date until I was 16, but then, which I was so grateful for. But when I turned 16, I think I may have never, ever gone on a date, except that our little high school had what they called back then a Sadie Hawkins dance, which at the time, keep in mind, we're talking in the late 70s, early 80s, that had this revolutionary concept where a girl might actually ask a boy out on a date.
And I remember it well.
Yeah. And so there was this lovely rural Wisconsin girl up the road from me who asked me to the Sadie Hawkins dance. And I was scared to death, but also had, you know, wanted to go to the dance with a girl. And so my buddy said, well, I'll drive. And so we showed up at her house for my very first date. And this girl's first date with me, me and my buddy Bullwinkle was his nickname. We never called him anything else, really. We show up in his ancient hearse to pick her up for my first date. And also, because of the church I was in, I wasn't allowed to dance. So not only did I pick her up in a hearse with my buddy, and she had to sit in the front seat with both of us, but I took her to the dance and didn't dance. I may have done one nearly motionless slow dance with her, and that was it. And then took her back home, did not kiss her goodnight. Just, you know, I took her, I did walk her to her door, I will say that. And then I think she dated me for 2 weeks and then moved on, and who can blame her? But very fond memory.
That is such a great story. I'm still in tears because it's just the visuals. And I now have teenagers that are dating, and I'm imagining if someone pulled up in a hearse, I just don't know what I would do. So thank you for putting that out into the world. And so much of what you do, I think I'm just in awe as I look through your list of, you know, novels and essays and this voicemail, the radio, you've got your band, the Clodhopper. I've got the wrong name. Longbeds. And so you're doing so much, and I'm just kind of in awe of these happenings. So you must have some sort of something you've learned about time management, production, some motivation that lets you, you know, keep accomplishing all of these amazing things.
You know, it's a combination of a lot of things, and I wish I did have good time management and organizational skills. I don't. But it's partly, I'll be partly jokey and partly serious in my response. I mean, the jokey part is that in 1992, I decided to become a freelance artist. And when you're freelance, you don't have any guaranteed income. You don't have a regular job. And so you just learn early, like, not to be too precious, right? If you get a gig writing an article about trucker radio for a trucking magazine, you don't sit around and think, well, I should be trying for the New Yorker. You're like, no, this gig seems good and they pay on time.
Yeah.
And so you start that way. And then I also always, it sounds corny, but I just go back to my dad. He had this huge kitchen table full of kids to feed, and he milked 18 cows and ran a flock of sheep and logged all winter. And I never remember him standing around waiting for applause as he came in from milking the cows for the second time that day, plus everything else he did. He just got out there and did it. And so I was lucky, I think, in that sense that the whole blue-collar work ethic, common folk, salt of the earth deal can be way overdone, and I've written about that. But at the base of it, my dad just showed me how to get out there and do it. And so I just had that low-gear hustle. And I say low-gear because I'm not flashy, and I'm not speedy, and I'm not fast, and I've never really been one of the cool kids. But I just keep at it, and eventually, 10 years later, someone looks down and goes, "You're still here?" Like, yeah. And then the other thing is, and this is, I guess, a business term, but, you know, again, unless you're selling a million books a year, which I'm not, I've got a career that I never could have dreamed of. I'm so grateful and so thrilled. But the bottom line is, someone told me once that I spend too much time away from my family and that I should stay home and live off my royalties. And if you would care to live off my royalties, you're welcome to, because I think at the time, you know, I won't get into it. The point is, good luck with that. Good luck making it a month. Right. And so I just adopted what the corporate folks refer to as multiple revenue streams. Things are very uncertain in publishing. They're very uncertain in music. They're very uncertain in the freelance world in general and in any form of self-employment. I mean, my brother is a self-employed farmer and logger. Things aren't any easier for him than for me as far as where your next paycheck's coming from. So some of that is just branching out into other things so that you've got different options. But the one thing I will say is none of it, not the band, not the speaking, not the performing, and certainly not the books and the Substack and all that stuff, none of it happens if I don't sit down and do the original thing, which is me alone at the keyboard writing. And that part I'm really grateful for, because that's what I always wanted to do. That's the first thing I want to do in the morning, is just get up and write. So I'm just so, I don't mind saying that I hustle, but I also want to be clear that I'm also very aware that I've caught some breaks, I've had great support, and that I'm ultimately very fortunate to be able to be in there swinging.
And it's a great gift to all of us, because you bring to life the world that you live in and the world that a lot of us are familiar with. And, you know, but the range of things that you do, as I mentioned, is broad. And, one of the things that recently, our last conversation was about the novel 40 Acres Deep. And this is a book, I tell you, it has stayed with me all this time since I read it. It's something that, you know, it's unlike a lot of your other work, it's got some very serious topics in it. But I think what I was really excited to see when I was looking and prepping for this show was that it's kind of taken on a life of its own, and it's really connecting with people, and you're getting big responses from communities all over. And I'd love for you to share with our listeners a little bit more about 40 Acres Deep and how that's, you know, reverberating across many different communities.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where it kind of follows on what we were just talking about, in just being willing to take what comes at you and work with it. And the bottom line is, I worked on this book for quite a while. It's a novella. It's what do they say? Longer than a short story, shorter than a novel. And when I sent it to my agent, who's very seasoned and has represented me for over two decades, and my favorite thing about her is she doesn't lie to me. If it's good, she'll tell me it's good. If it needs work, she'll tell me it needs work. And I sent it to her when it was done, and she said, "This is some of the best writing you've done in 20 years. And then she followed that up with, "And we're not going to be able to sell it to any of the big publishers." Ooh. And I wasn't upset by that. I rather anticipated that because it just doesn't fit into anybody's paradigm. A lot of my stuff doesn't. I mean, Population 485, which has been my most popular book, one of the things I had to overcome is them constantly telling me that volunteer firefighters and EMTs don't read. Dude, I've sold at this point tens of thousands of copies of that book to EMTs and firefighters at conferences, and they've come to the plays I've written, and it's just a matter of knowing your audience and how to approach them. And so when I heard that 40 Acres Deep really wasn't going to find a foothold in the mainstream publishing world, A, I sort of expected it, and B, I wasn't dejected. I just said, okay, well, I know what to do, and we've done this before. And so we just went down the self-publishing route. I'm very fortunate in that I have some really deep connections at a little independent publisher called Sneezing Cow Publishing, owned by, me. And so we just went ahead and forged ahead on our own and did it, and I hired a wonderful local graphic artist who's got Wisconsin roots to come up with what I think is a stunning cover. I can brag on it because I didn't do it, he did. And a local editor to work with me, and then the print books that we sell at events are printed by a local printer in within 10 minutes of my farm. And my trepidation about the book is that it's a heavy, heavy book. It's about real things. And it is, on the surface, it is very much about farming and what has happened to farming over the last many decades. And it is about one very specific and individual farmer facing what really are overwhelming circumstances. And so the response we've had has really been gratifying, is a weird word. I'll use it for shorthand, but, it's in its third or fourth printing. Now, just to be clear, so that I'm being straight with you, who defines printing, right? How many did you print? But, it's in its third or fourth printing, so it certainly sold more than we expected. I've been speaking at farm groups, mental health groups, but above all, just the correspondence that I receive for a book that I was afraid to publish, because I thought, I write a lot of humor, and I write a lot of stuff that isn't all that dark and deep, and I thought maybe some folks would be put off or upset or even offended. There's pretty raw language in some of it, but I told people that's because that's what people say in those circumstances. And so not only the farming community, but the other thing, that the book, it's told through the character of a farmer, but he's really struggling with all the same things we're all struggling with these days: a sense of isolation, a sense of being overwhelmed by everything that's coming at us, a sense that maybe the good, solid, quiet people don't always win, that sort of thing. And the reason I bring that up is I was just down in Alabama and did two book tour stops down there, both of them in roadhouses. Again, I always think of my New York publishers, who, by the way, have changed my life. I can't say enough good things about what they've done for me. But occasionally I have to tell them, I did a reading in a roadhouse in Alabama, and there were 150 people there, and we sold a pile of books. But
do they can they even visualize that? I don't know.
Right. And the thing that I found wonderful about that is we sold a ton of copies of we did sell a ton of copies of Population 45 and 40 Acres Deep, both stories set in rural Wisconsin. It's not about that. It's about the characters themselves. They recognize themselves. They recognize their neighbors. The accent changes and the number on the population sign changes. But yeah, 40 Acres Deep, we sold a bunch of them down there, and I did radio interviews about 40 Acres Deep down there, because it doesn't just speak to farmers, it speaks to all of us and what we're trying to sort out in our own heads and hearts.
Yeah, and you've posted a few of the letters that you've gotten from some of those readers, just really connecting with, some of the intense mental health issues and depression and, that is happening in rural America. And I was moved really deeply by what some of those letters have shared. You of course posted them anonymously so that the identifying things have been deleted, but just to know that something that you wrote can really, bring to light something that's hard to talk about, can, resonate with people, that they can say, this happened in my town, this happened to, someone in my family. And folks, if you really want to hear about what's happening it's all across America. I think 40 Acres Deep is a pretty good you know, way to start thinking about that and reconnecting again with other parts of our world, because a lot of us get siloed into our own people and places and connections and sources of information.
Yeah, I'm deeply vulnerable to that myself. So sometimes I love being alone, but it isn't always healthy.
Mm-hmm. So I can't recommend that book enough. I absolutely love 40 Acres Deep is the name of it. It will stay with you. It will, it'll rock your world. So you can find more information about that at sneezingcow.com. And also, I want to remind you, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I'm Paula Granquist. We're talking with the fabulous Michael Perry, author, humorist, singer, songwriter, and playwright. And he is coming to Northfield for an event. You always have a big following here in Northfield. I hope we bring out a whole big group of folks to the Grand Event Center on Saturday, April 27th from 7 to 8. You'll be joined on stage with Benjamin Percy, and it's a continuing celebration of Independent Bookstore Day with Content Bookstore, and that website is contentbookstore.com. Get the details at their events page, and I'm really thrilled. I'm kind of interested and intrigued to hear what you and Ben have cooked up. And how much of it's going to be you guys telling stories, picking on each other maybe a little bit.
I'm excited about it too. I'm trying to think where to start with Ben, because Ben fascinates me. I think I met him when he was still a college student in Illinois.
Oh.
And yeah, I went down there to speak. Population 45 had come out, and I went down there to speak. A fellow who had helped me along the way a lot was teaching down there. And I think Ben, this is part of what will be fun. We can sort the story out live on stage and correct each other like an old married couple. But I remember meeting him when he was a student. And then I also remember going to a reading once where he was reading, and he gets up on stage. And for the first 2 minutes, when this guy opens his mouth and starts talking, I'm like, is he being silly? And then you realize, no, that really is Ben's voice.
Yeah, you can't even get that low.
Yeah, he's got an amazing voice. But he's also just one of those supremely talented writers, a novelist, a screenwriter. And the other thing that I just admire so much about Ben is we relate because we both live in the rural Midwest, and we like it here. And we haven't gone chasing off after something we're not, and it sort of worked its way around to the point, and you know, I'll let Ben offer his opinion, but it would sort of worked around to our advantage at this point, because Ben too, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I've watched how he's operated, you know, and those multiple revenue streams. Guy's writing for Marvel Comics, he's writing for major publishers, he's doing screenwriting. But at the end of the day, when I talk to Ben, it's always this very workmanlike approach that he takes. He's not telling me about the flashy meeting he had in L.A. He's just talking about being a dad and living in Northfield and how they like it there and chopping some wood. We do have a joke between each other. We
oh no,
we both chop firewood, and we also try to stay pretty polite and on social media. You know, it's a necessary thing these days. I can talk about humility all I want, but the truth is I have to promote my work because that's how I make a living. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on social media. But we try not to get sucked into the controversy of not only the day, but the next 10 minutes. But we do vent to each other. There's this group of people out there, and some of them, by the way, are our cherished readers. So
I'm but curious where you're going here.
Well, we'll post just a simple picture and go, oh, I split some firewood today, right? And immediately you get all these comments about how you're swinging the axe incorrectly.
Oh, no.
You need to change your form. I see you're using an X12/C axe head. You really should consider using the Fisker's B12. And you go, you know what? The wood is split. I feel like it's going to burn fine, and I just wanted to show you a nice picture. I didn't really ask for all these in-depth critiques. So we joke about that, about posting our wood splitting online and getting all this free coaching all the time. Now I've probably offended some of our readers. If you're out there, we do appreciate that you care about us to that extent.
Right. That's they're looking out for you, so to make sure you keep your back strong and keep your tools sharp and, you know, keep your game going so that you can keep chopping wood. Yeah. Of course.
But I think the best part about the event we're going to do together on the 27th is just we'll share from our work and just that friendly familiarity and we also love talking about the business and the inside stuff, but in that sort of informal way, because we both, again, I'm speaking for Ben today, which actually I keep kind of apologizing for it. I should just take advantage of it and just tell you, well, this is what Ben thinks, and let him deal with the fallout.
I'm sure he'll find out. It's a small town.
I think he can handle it.
Yes.
But I think what we do enjoy sometimes, we share this deep, deep gratitude that we are allowed to do what we do. We never, ever lose track of that. We talk about it all the time, how so many folks would love to do what we do. But then we also share that boots on the ground attitude where we appreciate what the folks on the coasts do for us, but we also don't mind reminding them occasionally that sometimes out here in the Midwest, we think things up all by ourselves. And so it's that kind of blend of thing that we'll talk about, plus, yes, a little bit of jabbing each other based on our long-term friendship. And I think our first date was at Culver's, too, which seems so perfect.
That's absolutely perfect. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and I can say, knowing both of you, that I don't know any two people that work harder at their craft and their, you know, promotion and their multiple revenue streams, as you said, than either of you. I have a distinct memory of seeing, I had just gotten done with all my Christmas shopping. I think it was Christmas Eve. And I walked into the coffee shop to get a, you know, just a reward for all the hard shopping I'd done. And there was Ben with his computer. Christmas
Eve.
Yeah,
and I think you're reminding me, too, that another thing that I think is fun when Ben and I get together, and I hope the audience will get a little bit of this, is that Ben, for all his wood splitting, he's an academically prepared writer. He truly can break things down in the academic sense. And I admire that so much because I come, you know, I'm the farm kid with a nursing degree who wound up writing. And I can speak from the heart about writing and I can speak about craft, but mine always tends to be made up terms and reactive and just sort of reporting what works for me. And both ways work, but I think it's fun sometimes to put two folks who are doing the same thing but came at it from a completely different angle, his more academic and mine more figured out as you go along. And that leads to some fun conversation, too. And then I think the one thing I want to make sure and mention, too, is that I talk about us coming to this thing from different angles, but we both have wound up over time at Content Bookstore in Northfield, which is just, you know, Ben and I have been to hundreds of independent bookstores over the years, and there are some amazing ones out there, and Content is right up there. I don't know if folks know or not, but we see a lot of bookstores, and you've got a gem in Northfield, and you've also got some folks there that are the reason it's a gem. So I really want to thank them for supporting this event. And of course, we're doing it on Independent Bookstore Day, which is just one more excuse for you to swing by there first and then join us later.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And I was just at the Grand earlier this week for another Content Bookstore Craft Talk. It was with poet Michael Bazette. And this was the launch of their craft series, a Content Bookstore Craft Talk. And I thought it was really fascinating. It was a great event. And I'm so excited to see the Grand so just activated in our community again. They're another place that's doing great work to bring people together. And one of the things he talked about, which really surprised me, was sort of the idea of how poems and jokes are a lot alike, that each of them use a frame that's similar. And I thought of you because, you know, you write things that are, you know, just gorgeous, but also you have this great sense of humor. And I wonder if you've thought about that, and even songwriting too can fall into that they all have sort of a structure to them that, that allows you to communicate with the audience because they have an expectation of what's coming, and then you kind of play with that expectation, and there's that some parallels in that. Is that something that you've found across, and is that one of the ways that you keep your voice, you know, consistent across all mediums?
So this is perfect because I mentioned that I was just in Alabama doing two events. And my host down there, he's a successful author, but he started out as a comedian.
Oh.
And he and I were driving through rural Alabama talking about exactly this. Because I got started in writing as a poet. I loved poetry, and I very quickly learned that I wasn't that good at poetry, and I also found out that it's really hard to make a living writing poetry. But we were talking about humor, cadence, word choice, word order, and poetry, and the very same things. And humor, and if I because I wasn't anticipating this, I'm afraid I don't have any good examples, but we both talked about how we will sit alone and write and rewrite a line that's supposed to be funny, and how if you move one word back three words, you just change the order, or you deliver one term later than the other, you will get twice the laugh. The line is still funny, but just the placement of a word will amp the laughter up 20 or 30 degrees. And of course, same with poetry. It's all about cadence and rhythm and even scan and all those sort of things. And so absolutely, I have thought a lot about that and do talk a lot about that. And I listen when I read stuff in front of an audience. And there's many times when I've had a line that gets a nice little laugh, but I realize, oh, if I can delay the payoff 12 more syllables, then the anticipation will be greater and the laugh will be bigger. And again, like I said, I can't pull up a specific example today, and then of course poetry to me, all those years I spent really working hard at poetry, well then of course what you do is you sneak it into your prose. And my favorite part of writing is revision. I just love when I finally get to the point where I can sit down with it and just start obsessing over the line. And the same deal, just how, even if it's not a funny line, if it's supposed to be a powerful line or a quiet line, what happens when I remove this clause or when I interject something here or I move again? One of the things I get a kick out of just repositioning the order of words. And so, yeah, it's not only do we talk about it, but I was just talking about it last week in Alabama in a pickup truck.
I love that story because I guess I had never really made that connection. I think sometimes poetry feels unapproachable, but for some, I love poetry. I read a lot of poetry. I support a lot of poets, and it's a fascination of mine. But the connection to the writing of humor really got me excited. And so what a great coincidence to hear you talk about it in that way as well, because it really does. It has that same, you know, you're playing with tension, you're playing with, you know, what people think is coming, and then you're, you know, twisting it a bit or turning it or, you know, giving them that opportunity to see anew. And it's just something that I can't wait to explore more. So I'd be curious what Ben might say about that. So you might have to throw that to him while you guys are out on stage.
If you're there and we haven't gotten to it, yell it out.
I promise. I will,
because okay.
I think, and I've got it on my calendar. I'm not going to miss it, and it's going to be an incredible night. You were just, I so appreciate you saying that about writing, that it's in the rewriting, and you know, I think people hear that authors, you know, do that revision and work with word by word. And you know, I've had some mentors tell me, you know, you've got to, every word has to matter. You have to play with it. And to hear you say that, it's affirmation of that is essential. It makes a big difference. And writing is hard work. I don't think people always...
It does matter, but I also rush to... I just had an email yesterday, and I get this email 4 or 5 times a week, and I get it several times in book signing lines, and there's so many folks out there who want to write, who want to tell their story, and they're very intimidated by the part we were just talking about. The woman yesterday said, you know, I'm not as facile with words as you are. I think the term she used, she said, I can't write things that are as creamy as what you write.
I hear that, and I think that is original and fabulous. When she says creamy.
That's exactly what I told her. And I said, and the other thing is, I said, Don't worry about that part initially. If you could see those first drafts that I write, if you could see that line that gets a... There's a story that I tell. I don't know if I'll tell it in Northfield, but I've told it 1,000 times at this point because it's just a great way to start my events. No matter whether I'm speaking at a corporate event for accountants or whether I'm speaking in a for a writing club, I start with this story about a guy drinking a beer at 8:30 in the morning at a softball tournament in my hometown. And the payoff line is the guy just says it's a little early in the morning for softball as he chugs a beer at 8:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Now, I can get you to laugh if I just tell you what I just told you. But what I do is I go through a 5-minute setup where I frame everything and I talk about the softball tournament and I talk about what, you know, why we're in the beer tent. We're there to clean it up. We're not there to sell beer. And of course, the whole thing is building to right to that payoff line that this guy utters. And even at the end, I take a little, you know, right when I'm about to utter the line, I take what seems like me just going off on a tangent on a whim. But of course, I've done it 1,000 times. But it's that delay that gives you the payoff then for the big line that gets the big laugh. But believe me, I went back and listened to a recording of that line that I did 15 years ago, and it wasn't the same, and it didn't get quite the laugh. And so what I... As we talk about perfecting and polishing and revision and the beauty and the wonder of that, I always rush to tell people to know, first of all, just talk it. You talk your story like you would tell it to me. Talk it into a microphone, type it out, whatever. Don't worry about being a capital W writer. Just get it down, because the secret is there's no secret. And my first drafts are clunky and go off on the dead ends, and half of it will have to be thrown away. And so, yeah, it's a balance of both those things. You can't polish something until you've got that big hunk of rough stone.
Yes, I'm so glad you shared that story, because I'm actually thinking of that writer and wanting to hear more of what she says. And that's something that people need to develop as well, as their voice, as they call it. It's not even that fancy. It doesn't have to be that fancy. It's just how you tell a story. And one thing I always tell people is sit down at, you know, your family dinners, and maybe it's a holiday and you can observe different generations of people and watch how they tell a story, and that will be comfortable and familiar with you, and that will show you an entry point, right, of how things develop and what, you know, patterns are in the speech of the people that you love. And if, you know, if you're writing from your authentic self, that's where people want to connect.
Yeah, two things come to mind. I think you mentioned achieving voice, and somewhere over 20 years ago, I think I wrote this, but I think it's one of the few things that hold up that I think I was right about. And that is that achieving voice is more a passive than an active process. I think it's a hurdle to a lot of people because they're like, I have to find my authentic voice. No, your authentic voice will find you if you do this long enough and if you're open to it. And the second thing that comes to mind is I had my elder daughter struggled mightily with dysgraphia and dyslexia. And I remember her well into her school years weeping on the floor, the living room floor, with note cards spread around her, trying desperately to write a paper. And this is a kid whose vocabulary was off the charts when she was a toddler, but she struggled to learn to read, and she just, writing was awful for her. And so I remember saying to her that day, just put the cards away. Now tell me what it is you're trying to write. And she, of course, in 3 minutes, laid out this beautiful paragraph of words. It's just that they were coming from her heart and head. And I remember saying to her, now, did you hear what you just said? And she said, yes. I said, that, now you just write that down. It's not a separate process. And believe me, there were a whole lot of other folks involved in helping her get to where she is now. But I just remember that as a critical point that applies to folks, even if you don't have dyslexia or dysgraphia. Don't overthink it. Just get it out there, and then your natural voice will have emerged. And your natural voice is usually pretty much on the money.
I couldn't agree that is really what it is. And it's about showing up. That's, you know, 90% of it. So
there is that. Now we're back to the farmer ethic, work ethic. Yeah.
That makes it, it makes it work. And so what have we missed? What do we have? We have like a few more minutes here. I want to make sure that we've covered. Oh, we forgot to talk about the long beds, because I saw that they are playing a run in Wisconsin, which isn't that far away from us. From April 18th to the 20th, you're going to be in Stoughton, Verac. Oh, I'm saying that wrong. I know Verac.
It's It's all right. I'm from Wisconsin. I can tell you it's Viroqua.
Oh, Viroqua. Okay. Yeah. I've seen it before, heard it before. I don't think I've visited there, but I'm sure it's a lovely place. And Menominee is the other place that you'll be. Those details are on sneezingcow.com. You're also giving a talk in Menominee, so if you want to do a daytime drive, that's on April 20th at the Menominee Public Library. 150 years of service. And that one, I would imagine is probably the library is another place that you particularly enjoy being a part in helping support.
Yeah, in the book Coop, I wrote about how we started this interview with me telling you that we had a house with no TV, no radio, no movies, none of that stuff. But my mom, every week or every other week, drove us about, 11, 12 miles to the nearest little town that had a little public library. And we came home with stacks and stacks of books. And so libraries have been formative for me. I was learning to be a writer thanks to the library long before it ever occurred to me to be a writer. And libraries have continued to be so supportive. And I have a couple of library events coming up in the next few months. So, yeah, I think the main thing is if you want to know more, that's always weird for me to say, but if you want to know more, just go to sneezingcow.com. And if you just go to there and then scroll down, there's that, like I said, that overview page, and then you can just explore around. We have the events page and then the store, which has every book I've ever written and things that are recorded. And then, that's another thing. The books, nearly all, not quite, we have a couple that are still in process, but nearly all of my books are available both as ebooks and audiobooks too. I know that we have a lot of folks who are really into audiobooks now. And but again, for this particular event, I really want to draw attention back to content bookstore. There's just something that independent booksellers do. It's called hand selling. Mm-hmm. That you simply, AI won't fix it. The algorithms won't fix it. There's nothing like someone who loves books and literature and knows you. So when they know both of you, they can really guide you. And Content Bookstore is a shining example of that in Northfield.
I couldn't. In fact, I've got some books to go pick up down there right after the show that I'm going to be enjoying as well. And I just love this. I wish radio, it's kind of fun. I'm sitting here, I'm watching Jim hanging the sign on the new shop across the road. The fire truck just drove up the hill. There's a golf cart going around, so I'm thinking there's something going on. I love the window that I have, and I'm so delighted to be able to bring stories like yours. There's more we can talk about, but hopefully we can do that on the 27th. Again, Saturday, April 27th at 7 p.m. Probably going to have to get there early to get a seat because I think it's going to be a big night. So thank you for putting Northfield on your tour and coming to visit us and hanging out in Northfield.
Thrilled to be there, and thank you for having me on your radio show.
You're very welcome. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
All right. You bet.
Bye-bye. Thanks, folks. This is Art Zaney, Radio for the Imagination, and we are hoping that you enjoy a story today, that you share some of your imagination with the world, and that you always remember to enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zaney, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zaney is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372.
Do you have an old junk?